Hello, and welcome to my podcast. This is an audio version of my videos, available to make listening to my stuff in the background easier than YouTube makes it. But since my videos are primarily made for YouTube, there may be occasional references to visual materials. If you'd like this podcast ad-free, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/vicerhino. Please enjoy. Hello, and welcome to my channel. Vice Rhino here. Today, I'm looking at another video in the What About Bones series from Reasons for Hope. If you'll recall from the last time I touched on the series, which was a while ago, I got a bit frustrated at the fact that the What About Bones series was taking so long to get to the subject of fossils, instead opting for explaining why a dictionary from the 1800s has better definitions for words like science, because it appeals to God in some of the examples. Well, I watched ahead and skipped straight to the first video in the series that actually talks about fossils for a significant part of its runtime. So here we are, in video number 8 of the series that's about fossils. Gotta love how creationists always get straight to the point. Let's go!
The idea that dinosaurs evolved into birds is pretty much accepted by almost every secular scientist and most people.
Yes, because it is a demonstrable fact that birds are actually a group of theropod dinosaurs. Because when you look at the characteristics that define a dinosaur, birds fit the bill, pun intended. They have an upright stance with legs perpendicular to their body, they lay eggs, their skulls have holes between their eye sockets and nostrils, and there are two holes behind the eye socket. Even bones that dinosaurs have that are absent in birds have been found to be present in bird embryos, but with an altered development path. So basically, we know that birds are dinosaurs in the same way that we know bats are mammals, because they fit all the definitional criteria. For some unknown reason, creationists don't seem to have a problem agreeing that bats are mammals while still ignoring the evolutionary connection, but they just can't seem to wrap their heads around the fact that birds are dinosaurs because that is just too evolutionary.
But I know that these are movies, and they're being used to teach a generation how to think.
Well, you shouldn't use movies or TV shows as a basis for learning scientific truths. Yes, movies like Jurassic Park, which is the movie he's talking about here, but I skipped that part, do make use of some true statements to make their fictional worlds more believable, but science fiction movies should not be a part of science education.
One of the primary messages in Jurassic Park is that the dinosaurs are still here. They just evolved into the birds.
I don't know if I'd say that was the primary message of the movie. It seemed to have been more along the lines of saying that scientists should not be playing God.
Yeah, but your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should.
But Alan did certainly do a decent job of explaining the similarities between velociraptors and birds. That brief moment of the movie was actually pretty scientifically accurate.
Look at the pubic bone, turned backward, just like a bird. Look at the vertebrae, full of air sacs and hollows, just like a bird.
And even the word raptor means bird of prey.
But then he immediately changed the topic and went on to a tirade about the visual acuity of the T-Rex compared to Velociraptor, with how a T-Rex's vision is based on movement.
And you keep still because you think that maybe his visual acuity is based on movement like T-Rex.
Which is one of the more obvious scientific inaccuracies of the movie, but it did make for an awesome scene by the Jeeps. Even if it does leave us wondering how the T-Rex was able to see the Jeep when the Jeep wasn't moving.
Well, let's deal with that claim. First, let me take you to the Cincinnati Zoo. There they have an exhibit called Wings of the World. You can't believe the video that they're showing there, so I want to show it to you, how the dinosaur evolved into the birds.
Preemptive caveat here that the museum exhibits are not themselves evidence. Rather, they are an attempt to display in a visually engaging manner what our current understanding of the evidence is. I'm curious as to why you didn't include sound with that. Usually that sort of video will have an audio track explaining what it is that you're seeing. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you're looking at it, the Wings of the World exhibit was renovated about 3 years ago, and they seem to have gotten rid of the section that explains that birds evolved from dinosaurs in favor of more engaging interactive exhibits. That's the unfortunate part. The fortunate part is that they also got rid of the overly restrictive bird habitats to make it better for the birds that they keep there, giving them more room to live. So I guess we'll just never know how that video went down.
You got that right. The dinosaurs evolved into the birds because a dinosaur ran, and it ran, and it ran.
There are a number of different hypotheses as to how and why the wings developed. And actually, the how is pretty well answered by the fossil record, and the why is more of a question of where the stroking motion of the wings that allowed for powered flight originated. An ability to run faster is one hypothesis. As a theropod was running, it could flap its wings to help it run faster. Another is the idea that the flapping motion was used in the catching of prey. These are both in the from-the-ground-up model of flight evolution, but there are also models from the trees down, where wings would have been helpful in protecting the animal from a fall, eventually leading to gliding behavior followed by powered flight. The reality is that this will likely never be a completely settled matter, though at the moment the ground-up hypothesis seems more plausible as a result of a lack of evidence for arboreal behavior in the lineage thus far. But, as creationists are so fond of pointing out, behavior is a difficult thing to determine from nothing but fossil evidence, and scientists acknowledge this difficulty even though creationists like to pretend that everything a scientist says about extinct animal behavior is said with 100% confidence.
And over time, the legs shrank and its arms grew.
Which, if there were selection pressures that encouraged faster running, could be helpful. Bigger, more powerful arms that flap as part of the propulsion would be selected for, and maybe there was some advantage to having slightly shorter legs with these more powerful arms. I mean, once gliding behavior develops, the shorter legs do decrease drag, so there is that. At any rate, it is a true statement that the limb size of birds became decoupled from their body size as they developed flight, and this decoupling ultimately led to the vast diversity of limb size to body size ratios among birds today.
Seriously?
Not the way you stated it, no. But seriously, those are changes that took place. Your imposition of the reasoning behind those changes is what is flawed here.
Let me illustrate that claim for you, please, okay? Ladies, cover your ears up for a second. I gotta talk to the gentleman.
Oh, it always makes me nervous when fundamentalists start trying to split their audiences like this. Sexism incoming!
Young men, listen up. I know, when you're young, it's really difficult. One of the biggest challenges is finding a young lady. I know. I'm here to help, though, okay?
Oh, homophobia incoming as well. You know, some young men might want to find other young men. And it's actually harder for them because the dating pool of gay men is significantly smaller than the dating pool of straight women.
I'm old now, and it doesn't matter anymore, but I've learned a lot over the years. If you want the ladies to pay attention to you, I've got the answer. Work out and get the guns.
And now the toxic masculinity trope. All women are only interested in muscular men. Individual tastes don't exist. Now, I realize this is just him setting up a silly scenario, but it does betray an underlying set of beliefs about sexuality that deserve to be addressed.
Ladies love the guns, man, I'm just telling you, okay? And this is where I can really help. I've learned a secret to getting the guns. All you have to do is take up cross country.
Yeah, nobody was suggesting that the legs went from being long to short and the wings went from being small to large in any one individual organism. It's called selection pressures. They act over successive generations. The protobird, with wings that are slightly stronger than its siblings' wings, was more able to survive than its weaker-winged counterparts. It didn't work out its wings any more than its siblings, it just had a mutation that made its wings bigger or stronger and allowed it to survive. It is possible that there was also a simultaneous selection pressure that made shorter legs advantageous, so it's possible that a protobird with even stronger wings than our example was selected against because its legs were too big for the other selection pressure. The workout regimen of these protobirds is entirely irrelevant.
Yeah, see, as you run cross-country, your legs shrink and your arms grow and you get great guns. You laugh.
And you overestimate your comedic abilities.
Well, that's what that video just depicted.
Only to someone with a criminal misunderstanding of what it was trying to depict.
We didn't even talk about the fact that a bird lung is totally different from a reptile lung.
Yes, the bird respiratory system is quite different from that of other modern reptiles. However, it does show evidence of being rather similar to, you guessed it, theropod dinosaurs. But wait, there's more! The main thing that sets a bird's respiratory system apart from other animals is that it is unidirectional. There is no stopping and then reversing of the airflow between inhaling and exhaling. It moves in a continuous pattern through a circuit of tubes using aerodynamic valves rather than mechanical valves. This type of respiratory system is present in modern-day birds and only two other groups, crocodilians and lizards. Interesting that the only other living group of animals to have this sort of specialized respiratory system would be found among the group of animals that, evolutionarily speaking, are the closest living non-avian relatives to birds. Almost like the beginnings of such respiratory systems were present in a common ancestor or something.
And that a bird bone is different from a reptile bone.
Yes, bird bones are quite different from modern reptile bones. However, they are very similar to, you guessed it, theropod dinosaurs! And yeah, now seems like a good time to point out that I am aware that dinosaurs are classified as reptiles, so depending on who you ask, birds are actually reptiles too, though there is some debate as to whether reptiles should be considered a monophyletic group or a paraphyletic group. If it's monophyletic, that means that every animal whose common ancestor falls within the reptile group is also a reptile, so birds would be reptiles. If it's paraphyletic, then the term excludes certain groups whose evolution has taken them outside of the defining characteristics, in which case birds are not reptiles. I tend to side with the people arguing for it to be defined as paraphyletic, as one of the defining traits of a reptile is being cold-blooded, which birds are not. And actually, depending on how you look at it, considering reptile to be a monophyletic term would cause mammals to also be reptiles, so it's more useful as a paraphyletic term.
There's nothing similar. And what about the bird's feathers? Supposedly the reptilian scale, which is a fold in the skin, got roughed up over time and turned into a feather?
Yes. Not only do we have excellent documentation of this throughout the fossil record, but there's even evidence to suggest that the foot scales of some modern birds are basically a regression from feathers back into scales. There are different stages of feather evolution and different substages within those stages, all of which have been observed in the fossil record. We even have pretty good evidence to suggest that hair, scales, and feathers are all homologous structures, that is, they had their origin in the common ancestor between birds, reptiles, and mammals. Now, sure, you are welcome to state your disagreement with your incredulous tones, but your personal incredulity does not falsify the data that we have.
Take a look at this. It's a pretty popular picture depicting the path to birds.
I prefer this one myself. It's not overcrowded, so it's easy to read. It marks significant evolutionary developments to show how those features can be traced through the lineage, and it's presented in a way that makes it harder to come away from it thinking that all of the species depicted in it are in a direct ancestral lineage with each other, instead of the cousin-type relationship that is more probable.
It's a secular picture. There you go, it must be true.
Being secular does not automatically make something true, and I don't know anyone who thinks that it does. And it's not a bad graphic, it's focused mainly on how specifically wings are developing rather than all the bird-defining characteristics, but while each of the species does branch off from the main line to indicate a cousin-type relationship rather than direct ancestry, it's not made as clear as the one that I prefer, but overall, it's not bad.
Because I'm a nice teacher, though, I'm going to help you. I've dug around and found the other names of the animals that aren't listed on this chart. That way you don't have to go do that.
Oh, I hope this is going to be better than the tired old other animals in similar categories existed at the same time as some of these transitions, but aren't representative of that particular part of the transition, therefore, the transition never happened.
Here's your assignment. You have to research each of the eight animals that are depicted here and give me two pieces of information. First is a picture of the actual fossil evidence that this image was made from. And secondly, how old are each one of these ancestors, supposedly, according to the evolutionary timescale?
Oh, okay. So it's going to be more along the lines of evolution didn't happen in a neat and tidy series, therefore it's false, even though it is well known that evolution doesn't happen in a perfect series like that. Hence my preference for the nested hierarchy depiction.
You're going to research that, and we'll talk about it in the next class. But for this lesson, let's look at another ancestor that they didn't mention in the chart. Please welcome Protoavis to the class.
Okay, I think I know where it's going for sure now. Now, when I'm researching things for my videos, I often use Wikipedia as a starting point. Despite its bad reputation, it is often a pretty good source of information, and it's usually a good starting point for figuring out whether a particular topic is worth more of a deep dive, or if a superficial understanding would be sufficient. In this case, let's just read the first couple sentences for the Proto-Avis entry, shall we? Proto-Avis, meaning first bird, is a problematic taxon known from fragmentary remains from late Triassic Norian stage deposits near post-Texas. Much controversy remains over the animal, and there are many different interpretations of what Proto-Avis actually is. When it was first described, the fossils were described as being from a primitive bird, which, if the identification is valid, would push back the avian origin some 60 to 75 million years. It goes on to then point out that the circumstances of its discovery make it difficult to determine if all the bones were actually from the same species. The bones were disarticulated and jumbled, which could be an indication of a mass mortality in a flash flood. So, basically, if the species is correctly identified as a species of proto-bird, then that means that birds evolved tens of millions of years earlier than was previously thought. It's not impossible, but it's not terribly likely. And if it is incorrectly identified, it is because of the circumstances surrounding its find, which no doubt will be used to imply that this is the state of most, if not all, fossil finds, which is just flat out not true. But I may be wrong, maybe that's not how it'll go. Let's find out.
To discuss Proto-Avis, we'll look at the article, Questions About the World's Oldest Bird, from Discover Magazine. In the article, we can see what the man who discovered the fossil thinks. His name is Dr. Sankar Chatterjee. If you've not read the article, please stop here and go read it before proceeding.
Yeah, okay, I did that, but your mistitling of the article wasn't very helpful in finding it. It's actually called Ruffled Feathers, and I was only able to find it because you actually had the publication date displayed, so I was able to go back and grab it from the archive. And I can see where you're going with this. The discoverer was convinced that it was a bird, and when they flew in another expert for a second opinion, because he had his own work to do, he didn't have time to spend more than a few days examining the fossil, and had Dr. Chatterjee explaining which bones were what, thereby introducing his bias into the equation. This was because the National Geographic Society, which was funding Dr. Chatterjee's work, was eager to put out a press release announcing the find of the oldest known bird, and so the process was rushed. And the find has been embroiled in controversy ever since, with the current consensus being that it does not represent the oldest bird, but is a chimera of different species from that time period.
Let's keep going, and remember that Discover Magazine is not a Christian publication. They're very pro-evolution.
Yes, and they describe the controversy surrounding this find pretty well. So, is this one of those scenarios where you're going to claim that even evolutionists agree that evolution is wrong here? Because they wouldn't just accept a new discovery without critique? Because, if anything, this strengthens the evolutionary case, because the creationists are very fond of heavily implying that evolutionists will just believe anything that they think supports evolution. The Proto-Avis discovery suggests otherwise.
Before we go any further, let's take a look at the two worldviews and see what they teach on the origin of birds. The first is the biblical worldview. And according to God's word, the only one who's always been there who knows everything, it's a historical account that we have in the word, God said he created the birds on day 5 of creation week.
Yeah, but I'm gonna have to take issue with your assumption that Genesis is an historical account. It's not even universally agreed among Christians or Jews that it's historical, so you can't just start with that assumption, even from a Christian perspective. It's also a demonstrably false assumption, so start with the false assumption and don't be surprised when you reach the wrong conclusion.
If the historical account is true, the evidence we find should support the premise that birds have always been birds.
Wait, are you going to instead go for the "we found a bird fossil that is older than birds are supposed to be, therefore birds have always existed but evolutionists don't want to admit it" line of thinking? I mean, wow, I guess you didn't really expect people to read the article that you told them to read, because it outlined the problem with that particular fossil quite well. But if Dr. Chatterjee ends up being correct, and it is a bird, then this doesn't mean evolution didn't happen. It means that birds evolved earlier than we thought. This is very unlikely at this point in time. In 1992, when that article was written, it was less unlikely, but many discoveries have been made since then that support the idea that Dr. Chatterjee was mistaken. And all of the problems that creationists have with paleontology kind of converged on that one particular specimen. The bones weren't connected in any meaningful way, they were crushed and had to be pieced together like a puzzle, it was rushed to the press before a proper analysis could be conducted, etc. And you're going to take this clear example of some of the challenges that paleontologists face as an example of something that is clearly a bird that existed before birds were supposed to exist? Is that where you're going here? Okay then.
And that's what I think you're going to see. Now, secular history says, according to the evolutionary model, slowly, gradually, over millions of years, a small dinosaur was running and they eventually turned into birds.
No. That is a drastically oversimplified and highly erroneous picture of what happened. And considering that the article that you're referencing was from 1992, about a find from the 1980s, when there was more of a question as to whether birds are descended from dinosaurs, it makes sense that that would have been a part of the debate. But it's not really up for debate anymore, because, shocker, we've made some progress in the last 30 years.
If this account is true, the evidence should show a variety of animals slowly, gradually turning from a dinosaur into a bird.
Which is pretty much exactly what we do see, your one example of a maybe bird that is evolutionarily early notwithstanding.
Here's an important point to understand. How you interpret evidence is based in large part on what you already believe.
Which is actually the problem with how they went about getting a third-party expert to examine the Protoavis skeleton. They had an already convinced paleontologist enthusiastically pointing out all of the bird features that it had, thereby imparting his bias onto the third-party expert's findings. Which is why that should have been an independent analysis conducted without the original paleontologist present. And the whole point of science is to eliminate as much of this kind of bias as is possible, which is why scientific progress basically took off really, really quickly as soon as the scientific method was firmly established.
And here's another picture. Pretty convincing, right? I mean, it's not fully bird, it's not reptile, it's got a little bit of both in there. It's a transitional fossil.
You know what? I'm just gonna stop trying to guess where you're going with your points, because you are all over the map in this one.
So what are we going to do? Why is this pile of bones so controversial? It's quite simple. Because of their supposed age.
No. The age is not the main reason why it's controversial. It's mostly about the condition of the bones and how they were found. At least according to that article that you told me to read.
According to Dr. Chatterjee, these bones date back 225 million years.
As far as I can tell, the dating is not in question. It's accurate, so nobody is discounting this find based on its dating.
Do you see the problem with this? Take a look at the path the birds chart again. Now do you see it? Protoavis, which according to Dr. Chatterjee is more bird-like than Archaeopteryx, has long been considered one of, if not the first bird.
Its proximity to Archaeopteryx is largely irrelevant. It is possible for a more basal species to exist even after another group evolves some new trait. So if Protoavis were to have been undeniably actually a bird, it would do nothing to invalidate Archaeopteryx.
Protoavis predates even the dinosaurs that were supposedly on their way to becoming a bird.
Yep, which is one of the ways that we know it is very likely not a legitimate bird. When it was discovered, the dinosaur-bird connection was still being disputed, but that dispute has been settled, except for a few fringe paleontologists. And so, in order for Protoavis to take its place as the common ancestor of all birds, there's a lot of work that would have to be done in explaining away a lot of other finds since it was found.
That's not possible!
That is possible. It's just highly unlikely.
Houston, we have a problem. By the way, it gets even worse. Let's take a look at the bones again from Discover Magazine. I'm only showing you a picture of the artwork here.
Yeah, and I'm not sure where you've been getting these graphics from, because so far there's been nothing that matches between what you're showing and what's actually in the article.
Let me fill in the rest of the images as we go along. The evidence is the pile of bones. They gave the pile of bones to 5 different scientists to explain what it is. One scientist says it's a bird. Another scientist says it's a transitional fossil between the dinosaurs and the birds. And still other scientists say that it's a reptile, and another guy says it's a dinosaur.
It's not that different paleontologists are coming to different conclusions about what the animal as a whole is. It's that they are pointing out that the individual bones that were assembled into Protoavis share characteristics with other known species that existed at the time, and given the damaged nature of the bones and the fact that they were found in a disarticulated state, it is more likely that they were misidentified as being one specimen specimen, then that all the data we have collected regarding avian phylogeny since then is incorrect.
Think about it for a second. Do we have a problem with the evidence?
Specifically for Proto-Avis? Yeah, we do. The skeleton itself is rather inconclusive, but it was initially presented as being conclusively a bird. That is a problem.
No, the evidence is a pile of bones. Where do we have the problem? With the interpretation of the evidence.
Yeah, you like to make that claim, but I think this particular scenario does a pretty good job of highlighting the fact that when there is too much wiggle room in the interpretation, it is not universally accepted that any one interpretation is the correct interpretation until more data is collected.
Speaking of interpretation, take a look at these three ancestors to the birds. I thought about giving another assignment, but I don't want to be mean to you, so we'll just do this together.
Oh, that graphic I recognize. And yeah, it turns out the bones in the middle of that graphic are what he isolated earlier that I didn't recognize, so I guess it's just his earlier drawing of Proto-Avis that came from another source. So, my bad. But why are you calling these three the ancestors of birds? That's not what they're doing in the article. It's actually a graphic involving five animals. The Proto-Avis, an unknown tree-dwelling reptile, and these three other reptiles. And it's pointing out that Dr. Chatterjee thinks it's a bird, some others think that it's this featherless tree-dwelling reptile, and others still think that it's a mix of the three reptiles at the bottom. Wait, is this where you got the whole they gave it to five different people and they came up with five different hypotheses thing? Because this sounds almost like that, but it's not what it actually is. Close, though. A for effort, I guess. Maybe work on your reading comprehension next time.
Please put them in sequence from oldest to youngest, left to right.
I mean, that's kind of hard to do, given that the article doesn't identify them with any sort of specificity. And given that these are proposed animals whose bones make up the Proto-Avis skeleton, my guess would be that whatever they may be, they all lived at the same time. Now, he presents this as a multiple choice question as to what order they go in from oldest to youngest, and I'll save you that and just skip to the answer.
And the answer is E, none of the above. And the reason is because every one of those images supposedly depicts Archaeopteryx.
I'm sorry, what? Like, what?
What?
No, absolutely not. None of those is supposed to be Archaeopteryx. Not one. Where did you even get that idea from? How did you arrive at that conclusion? How did you even come close to that conclusion?
Why do the images look so different?
Because they're not depicting the same animal, that's why.
Because of the worldview of the person that's making the construction of the bones.
Okay, you know what? I've decided that the least fucked up way to interpret this is to conclude that when he said Archaeopteryx, he meant to say Proto-Avis, and it was just a mistake on his part. That at least makes this make a little bit of sense, because those were all depictions of potential animals that could have had their bones contribute to the Proto-Avis pile, and he is now moving on to making points about how damaged the bones were, making the reconstruction an exercise in incredibly difficult guesswork, which, for this particular specimen, is actually true.
A number of critics consider his bones to be a hopeless mess of fragments that doesn't even come close to supporting his claim to the oldest bird.
Yeah, damaged bones, difficult reconstruction, piecemeal publication of results, yada yada, who cares? And that's actually where I'll leave it for now. We're only a little bit past the halfway point of his video, and now he shifts the topic to scales turning to feathers, so I'll save that for a future video. Today's comment of the day comes to us from Danny Parkman, who asks, "What is AIG, please and thank you?" Well, Danny, AIG is Answers in Genesis, one of, if not the most, popular of the creationist organizations. I sometimes forget that not everyone is as steeped in creationist propaganda as I am, and sometimes I use shorthand without properly explaining what it is. So feel free to call me out for that if you ever see me doing it. Thanks for watching. Special thanks as always to my patrons, Mark McManus, Mark Hetchum, Clench Eastwood, Lynn Dobbs, What Jesus, and all the rest, who are the dinosaur and two small reptiles whose bones make up the Archaeopteryx that is my channel. If you'd like to be completely misunderstood by creationists, you can join us on Patreon for as little as $1 per week over at patreon.com/vicerhino. If you feel so inclined, you can also support the channel through direct donation or my Amazon wishlist, which are linked in the description. If you'd like to listen to my videos in podcast form or listen to my podcast with my daughter, the links for those are also in the description, as well as links to my social media accounts and my PO Box address. See you next time!